Good morning, church.
You know, the phrase, "He's back," has a whole new meaning today, and some of you are shaking your head. Number one, they're letting me do this again. Now, number two, after having spent a couple of weeks at camp, it's especially good to be back. So, we do have a children's church scheduled, but I don't... Okay. So, there we go. For a second, I thought maybe they were waiting for me to come. All right. So, I want to thank Ken for his introduction to Fruits of the Spirit last week. He did a great job setting that up, so thank you, Ken. I appreciate that. I want to start by reading Galatians 5, 22 through 23, although you may have noted that's not the text that I'm using, but I want to keep reinforcing this idea of the fruit of the Spirit. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forgiveness, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. The first fruit mentioned in this passage is love. Now, bear with me for just a little bit. I'm going to get there, but I want to say some other things about the fruit of the Spirit before I get there. That's probably not a surprise to anybody. I do want you to notice what the first word is in this passage, is the word "but." Now, in the English language, "but" connects things. It's connecting Galatians 5:22 to what Paul has said right before that. He's speaking of things that are of the flesh, not of the Spirit. So Paul's doing a contrast here. He's contrasting on one side. Sorry for those people doing the live stream, I'm going to move. He's contrasting the flesh on one side to the Spirit on the other side. That's not just a natural thing for us to do. The Spirit is not naturally where we gravitate towards. It takes us a little bit of work to get there. Now, I'm going to say that I need a little work to get there. I'm not going to be so judgmental as to say whether you do or not. I'll leave that up to you to decide. But I need to work at being aware of spiritual things. I live in this world, and that's just the way that it is. Now, part of being aware of the spiritual world is also wanting to be successful in that spiritual world. Now, that might seem like it's going to be an odd word to use when talking about spiritual things. Success. That's not a word that we would normally associate with spiritual matters. However, success in spiritual matters is of the utmost importance for our eternal outcome. Now, why do I use the word success there? Why instead of other things? Our human nature is that we think of things in terms of success or failure. So if failure is not an option, then what is the option? It's success. So we think in terms, or let me suggest that we think in terms of success in growing spiritual fruit. So let's talk about growing spiritual fruit. In my mind, number one, if you don't know me, I have a very visual mind. I'm a great one for word stories and word puzzles. I'm a visual thinker. And so I read these verses on fruit of the Spirit, and I think of plants or trees. Have you ever, and I think Ken, you addressed part of this last week, that, or it may have been at camp, because, by the way, the camp session last week dealt with fruits of the Spirit, so I'm a little confused which place I heard which part of the message in. But they were talking about watching a fruit tree develop and how it starts out and it's got leaves and then it gets little flowers and that starts to develop into fruit and the fruit develops. And of course, this whole time when that's being talked about, I've got this whole picture going on in my mind that I'm seeing fruit developing. Not unlike we would see it develop in our lives. Now, there are kids' songs dealing with the fruit of the Spirit. Rest assured, I am not going to try. Ken, you're way braver than I would be. I would not be trying to lead that. That is, matter of fact, my bucket list is closer to not getting into doing that. So, the fruit of the Spirit definitely require growing and nurturing. Now, it would be really cool to wake up one morning and have all nine fruit of the Spirit be fully grown and ready to help us take on the world and Satan. But that's not the way it works, folks. We've got to start, and we've got to go through this gardening and caring and nurturing process. Anybody here a gardener? Okay, great. I got a few hands. Number one, I am not a gardener. Okay? I admit that. Plants come to my house to die. Okay? I fully admit that. However, I got to watch a lot of gardening in my life. My father was a gardener, and not just any gardener. This was a man who wanted to have his own greenhouse and his own garden center. He never got to see that happen. But he started his own plants. You know, many people go to the garden center and buy their pepper plants and tomato plants and do all that. Not my dad. He had them growing in the basement in January and sometimes earlier than that. So he'd have all of his own plants. And it just seemed like every year the garden just went a foot or two longer. I wondered if after I moved out, if my bedroom was going to be turned into a garden. Probably, yeah. Yeah, that didn't happen. I had two younger brothers, so they protected that part of the real estate. So let's think about for just a few minutes that relationship between the care and nurturing that the fruit of the Spirit require and our lives. So in order for the fruit of the Spirit to grow, what does it require? Well, it requires good soil. Apologies, I'm having a little difficulty with my insulin pump this morning. And that's not the first time that it's beeped. It probably won't be the last time it beeped or beeps on me this morning. So it requires good soil. Well, there's verses that deal with this good soil. So let's go and take a look at Matthew 13 is where we're going to start out. Matthew 13 and verses 3 through 9 is where I'll be reading. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came by and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Keep that one bit of verse in mind. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up, choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it provided a crop 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear. So in order for the fruit to grow in our lives, it needs good soil. It needs some place that we want it to be, that it can grow. But there's other things going on in that soil. Weeds. We have weeds present in our life. Let's go look just a few verses further down in Matthew 13, in Matthew 24, verse 24 rather, where we learn some more from Jesus. Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. When the wheat sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, so didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from? An enemy did this, he replied. The servants asked him, do you want us to go pull them up? No, he answered, because while you were pulling the weeds, you may uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvesters, first collect the weeds in bundles to be burned, then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn. So eventually, the wheat and the fruit, I'm sorry, let me try that again. Eventually, the weeds and the fruit are going to get separated. That's just going to be a fact of life. Oh, that's not going to go on the entire time. But weeds have another impact with our fruit, and that is it competes for the rest of the elements that we need to grow that fruit. It's competing with the water. It's competing with the nutrients in the soil. It's competing to get the light. I don't know about you, but I seem to always have taller weeds than I have grass in my yard. It's competing for the air. So the weeds, while they can be separated, have other detrimental effects. So we've talked about soil, but I've also mentioned that we need water, we need light, and we need air. Now, I'm going to skip down to talk about air, because there's a really cool attribute of air that I hadn't thought about until preparing this. Trees take in carbon dioxide out of the air. And what do they give back when they take in that carbon dioxide? Oxygen. The oxygen is what we need to breathe. If all we had was carbon dioxide, we'd have a problem. So there's a really cool attribute going on in that growth process, that it's taking out things that are bad for us and replacing it with things that are good for us. Here's a statistic that I stumbled into. According to the National Arbor Day Foundation, in 1 year, a mature tree will absorb more than 48 pounds of carbon dioxide. Now think about that. We can't see the carbon dioxide around us, but the tree is going to take in 48 pounds of it and give us back oxygen. So that tending and nurturing process has benefits to us that we don't even see, much like the fruit of the Spirit. So now let's get back to love. As I mentioned earlier, it's the first fruit of the Spirit mentioned in Galatians 5:22. There are a number of Greek words used for love in the New Testament. Here, the word is agape, meaning a love which gives itself away with a pure motive and most generously. A pure motive, most generously. That's a pretty good set of attributes. Now, why might love be mentioned first? Why didn't he mention self-control first? Self-control is good, but love, I'm going to suggest, love is what's necessary to help grow the rest of the attributes that are following. And we're going to hit some other points in Scripture that reinforce this point that love is important. The one that I'm going to give you next is how many times the word love is used in the New Testament alone. This, I'm not very good with math, so it took me a few minutes to add this up, but it's referenced 269 times in the New Testament. 269 times. Therefore, I'm going to suggest it must be important. All right. So now that we've established some of the importance of love, let's look at some verses, just a small selection of verses that reference love. These are not put in any particular order. I'm going to start at Matthew 22:34-40. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question: "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commands." So love, even in the commands that were given, even going back to the Old Testament, was important. Now I'm going to jump to John 13 and 34. A new command I give you, love one another. I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. So, love was important. Okay, now I don't have to be disturbed by that anymore. Okay, now we're going to jump over to Romans 5 and verses 6 to 8. And while I have only pulled out a few things in here, we can go throughout the New Testament and keep finding more and more verses. You see, at just the right time, we were still powerless. Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will someone die for a righteous person. Though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since we have now been justified by his blood, how much more shall we be saved from God's wrath through him? So God loved us enough to die for us. Now, I'm not sure. I think no study talking about love is going to be complete if we don't go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. So we're going to go over there because I think we see a pretty good set of attributes to go with love. Going to start out and read the first 8 verses. If I speak in tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Now listen to this list. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. I think that is a fairly encompassing definition of love that we can apply to the fruit of the Spirit. Without love, at least the way I read this, the other 8 are going to be tough to attain, maybe impossible to attain without love. So, This is the participation part. I decided to insert one of those in here today. It can always be a little risky. Think of someone you know who is loving. What are they doing that makes them loving? This is, by the way, the point that you get to say something.
Selfless.
Selfless. Oh, there's one. I think that one's in the fruit of the Spirit.
A servant.
A servant. Good.
A good listener.
A good listener. I heard somebody else.
Concerned more about others than themselves.
I think we're seeing connections to the other fruit of the Spirit. Now, there are some marks. Of love as a fruit of the Spirit. I'm going to read a short story. It was an ancient rabbi who asked his students how they could tell when night had ended and day was on its way back. Could it be when you see an animal in the distance and can tell whether it's a sheep or a dog? No, answered the rabbi. Could it be when you look at a tree in the distance and can tell whether it's a fig tree or a peach tree? No, answered the rabbi. By the way, I can sense a little bit of frustration in his voice happening here. So, well then, when is it, the students demanded. It is when you look on the face of any woman or man and see that she or he is your brother or sister. Because if you cannot do that, then no matter what the time is, it is still night. Another mark of fruit of the Spirit, or love as a fruit of the Spirit, comes in Act 7 in verses 54 to 60. If you don't recognize that, this is the stoning of Stephen. I want to focus on one verse. This is a whole story in here that is one to keep in mind. But I really want to focus on what is said in verse 60. Lord, do not hold this sin against them. When we're harmed, or when somebody does us wrong, we usually want to think in terms of judgment or vengeance. Stephen here was asking that they be forgiven. So another mark of love as a fruit of the Spirit is forgiveness. So I've got some practical questions to ask about thinking about love as a fruit of the Spirit. I ran into these. It's a series of Am I questions to think about. I'll be happy to share this, by the way, because I'm probably not going to go slow enough for people to write them down. But am I happy? Do I display happiness in my life? Am I patient? If you're not patient, you can be confused with somebody who's not loving. Am I kind? Somebody who's not kind can be confused with somebody who lacks love. Am I generous? Gosh, if you're not generous, that can leave people to think about how much love you have. Am I humble? If you're not humble and you're thinking about yourself, how much love are you showing? Am I courteous? If you're not going to be courteous to people, that leaves the wrong impression. Am I good-tempered? I know who's talking about self-control, and I'm already looking forward to that message. Because I'm going to be listening closely to that one. Not because of who's giving it, but that's one that I need to hear. By the way, a couple of these I am questions. I had to really stop and think about myself. Are these am I questions that I just asked? Do they sound like any of the other attributes of the fruit of the Spirit? Loving others. I think there's the most succinct definition of love in the Bible is found in 1 John 4:16. It's actually part of our reading this morning. God is love. It doesn't say God is love when he feels like it. It doesn't say God is love when he's loved. It says God is love with no conditions on it. Matthew 5:43-46 talks about loving your enemies. So now I've got to ask some, I've got to make some tough points here. We now live in a world that is so divided and so polarized that it can sometimes separate people over their opinions. Sometimes we see in social media the word hate used more than we see love used. How do we live in harmony in love with those we disagree with? Disagreement is going to happen. It's part of our lives. We need to be finding what we agree on before we look for the things we disagree on. Disagreement is going to happen, is part of our human lives. As humans, I guarantee you that we have far more in common with others than we have disagreement. Our focus needs to be in what we have in common and not what we have is a disagreement. Now consider how we may have responded in the past or maybe even respond today to hurting people. And when I say hurting people, I mean people who need us. They need our sensitivity, they need our love, they need our encouragement. This is one that I have to admit that I struggle with, and it's impatience. A whole lot of people see me as a really patient person. Yeah, well, that impatience can go away really fast. It's one I have to work hard at, is patience. So, impatient versus good-tempered and self-controlled. Impatience is a struggle for me. Now, Luke takes a little bit different look at love So I'm going to ask that we go look at Luke 10. If I can get to Luke 10. And beginning in verse 25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." Which of these three do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell in the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." So, why do you think Jesus turned the Samaritan into the hero in this story? Well, the Jews weren't big fans of the Samaritans. They were one of those lower forms of life. One of those people that they would have disagreed with. However, Jesus turned that person that they would have disagreed with into the hero for the illustration. So we can find things in common. Love needs to last forever. If our love, the first fruit of the Spirit, starts to fail, what could happen to the remaining fruit? Could they weaken? Could they fail? What is forever? Is forever next week, next month, next year? I read forever as the rest of our lives. God loves no matter what we do. Even if we disown him, he is ready to take us back. When? Forever. Love is an action directed to another person that is motivated by our relationship with Jesus. and is given freely without a personal reward in mind. Love differentiates Christians. Jesus says in John 13:25, "By this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another." I want to return to where I started this discussion on love. I want to go to John 15:5-17. This is the story of the vine in the branches. The vine is what's carrying the nutrients to the branches. It's that vine is what gives us the nutrients that we need to grow strong fruit of the Spirit. It's where the spiritual nourishment and strength comes from. God tends the vine and God tends the branches if we let him do it. So let's let God have our love grow by providing the soil, the water, the light, and the air that we need. If you have a need for the prayers of the church, this is a time that you can come and seek those prayers as we stand and sing.